Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is Zero Point Radio Show, and we're almost at the end of the year 2008, and been quite remarkable year, and we certainly live in a very troubling and dynamic time, very critical period in the life of humankind upon this planet. Now, my background and interest is mainly in mystical spiritual psychology and science and study of physics and creation science and so on. Our show focuses mainly on exploring the nature of human consciousness, and I expound what I call the heart doctrine, that the origins of a human being's self-existence and consciousness originate out of the human heart, and that consciousness and the I experience are not generated by the brain in the head, which is the main view that's predominated modern science for the last century. Over a century ago, scientists became convinced because of Darwinian evolutionary theory that we're simply higher primates and that a human being has no soul or spiritual nature and that consciousness is produced by the brain in the head. And that's become the dogma of modern times. And there's been a persecution within the educational system and science of those who would maintain a mystical or spiritual view or who have been interested in psychical phenomena. So these areas of studies have been throughout neglected within the educational system and within the scientific community. So one of the most key ideas here is that human consciousness and self-existence originate out of the heart. And I maintain there's actually a higher dimensional physics to the human heart. You not only have a physical heart, but you have a psychical heart, a spiritual heart, and ultimately a God spark, a divine spark within the higher dimensions of the human heart. And that's called different terms in different systems. In the Vedic teachings, it's called the Jiva Atma, the individual self. Madame Blavatsky in The Secret Doctrine refers to the monad. In Sufism, it's called the divine spark. So many esoteric teachings have this idea that a human being has a God spark, and the aim of life is to attain to the realization of this God element within ourselves. But mystical teachings also explain that the masses of humankind become so heavily conditioned that they lose awareness of their true nature. So they live in sleep or in a semi-automated sleepwalking state, and they do not know themselves. Okay. People think they know themselves. I once did a study at York University, and we asked people, how well do you think you know yourself? And we gave them a scale. And it was like 95% of people thought they knew themselves very well or, very well or quite well. Whereas from a mystical perspective, the self we think we know is not really your true self at all. It's not your egoic or personality identity based in the conditioning of your mind. Your real self, as aspired to by the mystics, is within the higher dimensions of the human heart. And Blavatsky at points in The Secret Doctrine, or in The Voice of... Sorry about that, listeners. I moved away from the phone and my headpiece, and I pulled the jack. Hello, sorry, listeners, I moved away from my phone and my headpiece pulled the jack out of my telephone, so we just temporarily lost connection there. So I was talking about the heart doctrine. Hello, I'm not sure exactly. I think we may need to transfer over to another line here, and we may lose connection for a moment again. I pulled away from my phone, and my jack came out of my phone, and that's how we lost connection. Welcome. We're back again. We're sorry, but we've had a few technical difficulties today, so we've lost the first hour of our show, but we pick it up, and we still have almost an hour to go. This is Christopher Holmes, Zero Point Radio. And in the background, I have James Moffat from Toronto, Ontario, co-host. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Good. Yeah, a few technical difficulties today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Saying it's the last show of the year.
Yeah.
It's been quite a year, and I was realizing, I downloaded all the shows from the archives, so I've got a complete record of our whole series going back right till April of 2006.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Yeah, I've copied those all down, and I'll copy today down from the archives, and we'll have a complete set of all the shows.
Wow, that's a lot of material.
It's a lot of material. I do encourage listeners to, if you don't support BBS and, join BBS and gain access to the archives, because there is a wealth of material that Jim and I have explored over the last years on mystical teachings, modern science, contemporary state of humankind, and so on, and a lot of fine programming on BBS. We're really so lucky, Jim, to have this opportunity through BBS to really had a chance for you and I to kind of get our work on record.
Yeah, this is thanks to Doug and Don, this is really a dream come true after several years, because we've been having these discussions for so many years, and it's really exciting to have the possibility to put them out there worldwide. I mean, the technology is amazing that people anywhere in the world can be listening to this, and also just to have the opportunity to communicate with others, and as you say, to have a record of this, and as you say, if people are interested in mystical and spiritual ideas, and especially how they relate to modern science and issues in the study of consciousness, I would urge them to explore our archives. They're not all gems, but there's really actually a fantastic amount of information and interesting discussion there. I can't imagine anybody who's seriously interested in these topics exploring this and not finding, that this would be very useful to them, and at least provocative. We're not necessarily right about everything, but I think it's a very unusual perspective, and it's all there in the archives and on some level. It's amazing that it's almost 3 years. Boy, that's...
Yeah, April of 2006.
Wow.
It was the first
great
show. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is an interesting year for you, too, because you were in New Zealand for the first several months of 2008.
Yeah, I had 5 months in New Zealand, and we continued our show even during that period. And yeah, I don't know if that's our guest. Come on, Matthew, are you on in the background? Okay, so we were supposed to have a guest today, but it seems the connection's not working, and we'll bring him on the next show, hopefully into the new year. Perhaps,
Chris, you were talking before we got cut off, you were talking about one of the fundamental ideas in the theory of consciousness that you put forth, and you're talking about the heart doctrine and about the idea, which recurs in a variety of esoteric and spiritual traditions, that we have within us a God spark, as it's called in Sufism, or a monad, as Madame Blavatsky refers to it, or the Jiva Atma, as it's referred to in the Vedas. And you were just talking about that, about the heart, before we went off the air, so perhaps you could just pick up on that and and expound on that idea a little bit.
Yeah, that's really, I guess there's two most distinctive features about the teaching presented here, and one is the heart doctrine, the idea that human consciousness and the I experience originate out of the heart and the higher dimensional physics of the heart, and that consciousness in the body is actually connected to blood flow. And there's a circulation of blood through the body, so we can be conscious through the body, and it's connected to the blood flow. And we also have subtle bodies, and in a sense, there's blood in the subtle bodies, meaning there's a circulation of vital energies and consciousness within the subtle anatomy. So that's one idea that's quite distinctive. And other people, yeah, in the consciousness literature, almost everybody in modern times assumes the brain produces consciousness, even though no one is able to specify how or where or any of the real enigmas surrounding this issue. And this idea of the heart doctrine, what's so profound about it, is that it's in esoteric Judaism and Kabbalistic teachings, it's in mystical Christianity, in the secret doctrine, it's in the Vedas, the Upanishads, it's in all these different esoteric teachings. And no one in modern times seems to really have grasped the significance of this and considered it as an alternative perspective on the issues of consciousness. So that's one aspect. And the second aspect is the zero point teaching. And this is a very complicated concept, but the idea is a human being has a zero-point center, and that's connected, again, to the higher dimensional physics of the human heart. And if you imagine a universe originating from a singularity point out of the quantum vacuum, I'm saying, similarly, consciousness originates in a human being from a point source, and it expands within without from a zero point. And that when a person approaches death, the consciousness and vitality withdraws without within back to that point source. So zero points, you kind of enter and exit the body through a zero point center connected to the heart. And again, the idea of zero point, like often people say, oh, you're like Greg Braden, who's famous for his book called Awakening to Zero Point. But Braden doesn't consider that human beings have a zero point center. He's only considering it in terms of the history of humankind, that we go through different cycles and we coming to a zero point, like a point where one cycle ends and a new cycle of creation or evolution begins. But he doesn't consider that human beings have such zero-point centers. So this, again, is another idea that Jim and I are trying to elaborate that's directly contrary to what people are ordinarily familiar with. And the third idea that we explore is this notion that there are fundamental cosmic laws, the law of three and seven, and that when creation occurs, it manifests a pattern of 1, 3, 7. God is first 1, then 3, and then 7. And this idea of the pattern of 1, 3, 7 is also evident in Kabbalistic teachings, Christianity, the Vedas, the secret doctrine. So we explore this, what I would call a magical formula of the universe. And so we're saying not only is there intelligent design in the world, but we're actually given hints as to what this pattern of intelligent design involves. It's like white light divided by a three-sided prism, and it gives you a spectrum of seven colors. In Kabbalistic teachings, in the Tree of Life, you have 10 sephira, or spheres, and there are three said called the supernal triad, and these are the three realms of existence beyond the level of material creation. And then there are seven spheres below, which the three and the seven give you a total of 10. So this Kabbalistic tree of life is, again, an ancient mystical symbol that depicts these deep esoteric teachings about the law of three and seven. So what we're trying to do is take these ancient metaphysical teachings and understand them in a new way. Jim, any...
Well, yeah.
And we go over these ideas quite a bit, I think, in our shows, because it's not like you hear the ideas once or twice and can comprehend them. They're ideas you have to struggle, make efforts to attain an understanding of these ideas. And then to attain it not only in the mind, in the head, but to actually experience what is being talked about.
Yeah, one thing we were talking about, zero points, Chris, is just that the idea of a zero point is a point which is so infinitesimally small that it's beyond measurement. Like, we reach a level which is beyond measurement, and this is the zero point, or the singularity condition in which modern cosmology suggests that our universe has emerged with the Big Bang out of the singularity condition. And what you're saying is that, which is very interesting, because it's in keeping with the esoteric maxim, as above, so below. The idea that in nature we see things on different levels of scale repeating the same dynamics, which fits in again with the idea of 1-3-7, is that zero points, and this is, I think, something, as you say, I don't think anybody else really considers this as a hypothesis, is that we have a zero point center, and that the life and consciousness forces emerge out of higher dimensional reality and within the human heart and from this zero point source. It's interesting because another angle on these questions is that we talk about consciousness and the I experience and the self, and you would think that after modern psychology is roughly about 130 years old, you would think that modern psychology, experimental psychology with all of its resources, would address, I think most people who aren't familiar with modern psychology with its study, or even many people who have perhaps taken first year psychology in university, think that the essential questions like the nature of the self and the nature of consciousness, that these things are clearly understood by modern psychologists. I would argue that, and Chris would argue that quite the contrary, that really these are major enigmas within modern psychological thought, and that the approach to their study is guided by mistaken assumptions about the nature of these phenomena, which really, when you look at them closely, don't stand up to any kind of essential scrutiny. Like, the I experience is interesting. Like, it's not even really a question within modern psychology. What is the nature of the I experience? And yet it's an essential question when you really think about what you're studying in psychology. Partly, in large part, modern psychology has dealt with these questions by dismissing them as being relevant. They, under the influence of behaviorism and psychology for many years, nothing inside people, nothing internal in terms of experience was really deemed to be worthy of scientific psychology. So it wasn't studied. It was just dismissed, or it was explained away as being essentially illusory, psychologists and philosophers call an epiphenomenon. It's not real. What is real is the material processes operating in the brain, which produce these phenomena. And really, the explanation of these things would lie in the study, in the reduction of them to their material causes. So, in a sense, really, we're not only sort of bucking the trend within modern psychology to attribute everything to the brain, but also to the denial of these essential questions. It's really only within the last 30 years that psychology has recognized once again the importance of consciousness. And I don't think there's really much recognition of the importance of understanding how the ordinary experience of the self might be illusory, or how the I experience can vary in terms of its quality. Like, there's no recognition within psychology that these things can have different meanings depending on the level of consciousness and being that someone's talking about. Like, modern psychology is very oriented towards reducing everything, smearing everything out into sort of one dimension. It doesn't recognize the multidimensional nature of consciousness or human being.
No, it's amazing how modern psychology has no physics to it. It's like no psychologists consider that there's a physics to consciousness. They think it's only a product of material processes, so they see it only on the material level, and they don't consider how there might be a physics to consciousness. And it's like we've had this separation of different disciplines, and whereas in the perspective we're presenting, we're saying there's a higher dimensional physics and metaphysics to consciousness and the human self-existence. It's a fascinating perspective to see that we live in a multidimensional universe, that we have different bodies that can exist on different planes of existence, that we might be embodied in different lifetimes and different periods, and so on.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's really important to understand that everything that we're suggesting here, everything that we're considering here, is really derived from this study of esoteric and mystical doctrines, which go back thousands of years in human history, and which involve, I would say, are empirically based, because they're based on this people's systematic studies of themselves in various, generally associated with various religious traditions, but not necessarily always with religious traditions. And that really there's a continuity of thought here, which is quite profound, and certain recurring ideas. And if you were to read many people who speak on from a scientific materialist perspective on the nature of consciousness and the illusions of religion and spirituality and psychic phenomena, such as Carl Sagan, you would find in their discussions of these, their references to these traditions, very fleeting and uninformed commentary that really reveals that these people don't know anything about these traditions, that they haven't studied them, that they're not informed about them, and that although they tend to be, although they claim themselves to be upholding intellectual rigor and systematic study of things as they are rather than as people would like them to be, really the modern materialists and skeptics are profoundly ignorant of this great tradition in human history, which has gone on for, as they say, for thousands of years, and they are completely ignorant of what these teachings entail. Moreover, this is the really strange part, is that even people who tend to be sympathetic to these ideas, or to, who at least will entertain that they, that mystical and esoteric teachings contain important ideas, have completely missed the boat in terms of recognizing the importance of the heart doctrine. I think that's, if nothing else, Chris's work, Christopher Holmes's work, is really unique in terms of modern thought in positing the importance of the heart doctrine and providing a completely different approach to the study of consciousness. It's really quite amazing, isn't it, Chris, in terms of when you read other people's work, how nobody seems to recognize this.
We've really been quite privileged in our lives to have been exposed to these ideas, and we've explored them together now for over 30 years.
Yeah, and as I say, until you began exploring this, I mean, I'm reasonably well versed in esoteric teachings. I don't have a broad range of knowledge, and perhaps have a broader range than I had, say, 20 years ago. But 20 years ago, I didn't recognize the heart doctrine. I mean, until you brought my attention to it, I was completely ignorant of it, and I started reading your works in progress. And as I said before on this program, at one point, you had so many references to so many different traditions, it was like kind of overkill in the sense that, you know, it's everywhere. You know, you don't need all of these quotes to show that it's everywhere. It is everywhere, but it's just quite amazing how once you have this basic idea about the importance of the heart, then so many other things begin to fall into place, and you begin to assume a very different understanding of things, I think. That's the other side of it, is that this is just the beginning to understanding, to reaching a very different level of understanding and approach to studying things, which was really quite extraordinary. And at the very least, you know, should be studied by modern scholars and modern researchers, because it's certainly nothing in these teachings that's unreasonable or which you could dismiss out of hand and say, well, that can't be true. What it requires is a serious readjustment in your assumptive framework. That's the most challenging aspect of dealing with this.
Yeah, I mean, no one seriously addresses the kind of orientation I present. I mean, my work is relatively unknown in the world, even though I've been on Coast to Coast two times and on other shows and have my website. Really, no one in the literature, I've never heard anyone else reference my work in discussions or in books or elsewhere. It's sad in a way. I think, you know, this is part of the lost teachings, the secret teachings of humankind have been lost within modern thought. And there's this whole, what I would call pseudo-scientific, materialist philosophy that's become predominant. Now we have all these series of books called God is Not Great and the God Delusion and all these books which are, for anyone who studied in these traditions and the issues of consciousness, these books are totally garbage. Like, they're totally superficial and really it's simply propaganda.
Submoronic, I would say.
Moronic?
Submoronic.
Submoronic.
Yes. Not even moronic, not even up to the level of moronic. As I wrote in the introduction to the problem of God's contracting universe, which I'm writing about your work and about these things, is that really these people like Carl Sagan and Daniel Dennett and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens, who were writing these books and explaining away God, when you read them, the thing that really jumps out at you is that they're completely unsophisticated in terms of their dealing with these issues. They're really just expounding on a materialist viewpoint, and they're shooting fish in a barrel in the sense that they take the most patently ridiculous aspects of religion, and there are very many ridiculous aspects of religion. They're quite right in objecting to these things. And assuming that this represents all religious and spiritual teachings, and as I said, I apologize for this, but it's they're exemplars of what I'd call the Saint Peter principle. You know, they've reached their level of spiritual incompetence in terms of their pronouncements, because they don't really deal with anything sophisticated. I mean, they don't. None of them talks about the nature of consciousness and the self from a mystical or religious spiritual perspective, you know, which they don't deal with the essential issues. None of them really gets into anything other than the easiest targets, you know. It's like it's the erecting of straw men and then, you know, the shredding of them and feeling satisfied with yourself that you've done away with religions. Patently ridiculous perspective on these issues, very complicated issues. So it's funny because, in a way, all of these people are attacking fundamentalists, religious fundamentalists, and their dogmatic and simplistic ideas. But in what they attack, they're guilty of exactly the same thing that they're objecting to. They're grossly oversimplifying an enormously complex topic, and then feeling satisfied with themselves that they've reached a complete explanation of things. Like, Dawkins is just so profoundly full of himself, it's quite pathetic when you read him, that that he's so sure of himself, and yet that's what he's objecting to in people who subscribe to religion, you know, that they're so sure of themselves based on incomplete evidence and incomplete examination of the topic. But he does exactly the same thing.
Yeah. It's sad. I mean, I see it now. I'm as part of what I call the New World Psychiatric Disorder. Like, I know people call it the New World Order, but I call it the New World Psychiatric Disorder, because I see these elites who are kind of scheming this fascist totalitarian world that they're trying to bring us into, and their population extermination and things so on. And these people think they're some kind of elite. And really, the way I see it, in mystical teachings, we're said to have seven chakras, and the heart chakra is the central one. There's three above it and three below it. And it is said that most people, the self within the heart is controlled by the three lower chakras. And that's why Gurdjieff says most people are what he calls a man number one, two, or three. And he says that we have to attain to the level of a man number four. That's the next step in human evolution. And that, the attaining of that stature of a man number four, involves the awakening of the higher emotional center, or of the human heart. So the awakening, the evolution of the human race requires this awakening of the heart, and then once we attain that level, we can attain to the development of the higher three chakras, which could confer on us additional psychical and mystical powers and experiences. So really, humankind has become controlled by the three lower chakras, and they're associated with money, sex, and power. And you look at the criminality of our governments and the police and what's happened in our society, it's people so obsessed with money, sex, and power that they have no humanity. They have no heart. They have no compassion. They have no feeling for anything beyond themselves and their own selfish motives. So really what's happened, the so-called elites, the pseudo-Illuminati, are completely pseudo-Illuminati. They're not real. They really represent a lower type. And what they've done is tried to prevent the evolution of humankind upon this planet. See, I think at this point, I believe we're facing the same issues as was evident in the time of Atlantis, where supposedly humankind destroyed themselves through the development of technologies, but people hadn't developed spiritually, and they ended up destroying themselves. And I think on this planet, we're at that point. We have these subhuman types who imagine that they're these big Illuminatis because they've been able to deceive people and diminish people's intelligence and do all these devious things they carry out. And they imagine that they're some elite. And really it's not. They're the scum that rose to the top. And that's what's happened. And they've prevented the evolution of the human race. Most people in life have more heart. They have more feeling for other people, or for your nation, or for your environment, or for God. The people have more feeling in the heart. But the people who become involved in the elite, become purely mechanical human beings controlled by the three lower centers. And upon death, they face terrible consequences for this. I actually believe that they are consumed by the moon, that they may pass to the moon, or they may subsist after death in lower states, like hell, different types of hell conditions. So we have a grand play. Sometimes I think, boy, God's story. I try to think of is there any Hollywood movie presents any grand adventure anywhere near the scale of God's story, of what's actually happening on the planet at this time in human history, where we have these psychopathic elites who are trying to bring about the destruction of the environment, the ruination of the economy, the forcing people into desolation and sickening people through chemtrails and fluoridating their water and all their new psychotronic weaponry, their invisible psychotronic weaponry. These people are severely psychiatrically disturbed. And that's what's happened. And what we need is for people around the world to try to find courage, which means new heart, from the French, la cour, standing for heart. We have to attain to the level of the heart learn to subsist and live within the heart, to face these problems that we face as a species in this time. So we're in quite a, in my website, I compare it to the tale of the Lord of the Rings, because I think God's story is this grand Lord of the Rings. It even puts the Lord of the Rings, makes it seem small and puny. God's story is this remarkable story about these black satanic forces that kind of overtook the human race and prevented human evolution. And we're living in wild, wild times, and I fear for people because I believe people are losing their souls, and these elites would turn people into automatons because they don't believe there is a spirit or soul because they don't experience it within themselves. Their psyche is controlled by the money, sex, and power. They have no love in their heart, no compassion for other human beings. So all of the religions, in a way, have talked about attaining to the heart and love and compassion. And that's why these elites are so against religious tradition.
But they're not.
Sorry?
They're not.
How do you say, see that?
Oh, I mean, I completely disagree with what you're saying about, you know. I mean, I think, first of all, like, I don't think it's as conscious as you're making it out to be in terms of, like, in terms of elites and manipulating people. People, you know, that's been going on for thousands of years, been going on throughout human history. But, I mean, I would say that in large part, I think that the elites in most of the industrialized world use religion to manipulate people. And, I mean, I think religion is often used to manipulate people, and it's this subscription to, like, a pseudo-religious perspective. It's like you dress something up in Jesus and, you know, and gild it, but it doesn't have any, reference to real Christianity or to real Jesus. It's like, you know, when, Jerry Falwell was preaching, and he was saying that, you know, that God supported apartheid in South Africa, or, you know, that most of the United States, I mean, most of the fundamentalists are very right-wing and support the arms race and support. I see it as being more, the problem is more, it's just a general level of unconsciousness. Like, to me, I think people can actually be more spiritually awakened sometimes, who are atheists, so-called, who have a more of a sensitivity to the wonders of their own being and to the wonders of creation. I mean, I think a lot of things get lost in superficial labels that somebody can say, "Well, I'm religious," but they're not religious at all. Religion means to unite, and they're very divided and very conflicted, and they're very ruled by these lower chakras, as you say. I think that's quite true. But I think that sex, money, and power is basic lower motivations have dominated human history. I think that's that you can see that throughout human history. And I, in a sense, I mean, I was thinking about this, like, a few weeks ago. You were talking about this, and you were talking about the different elements of your perspective, and you were talking about the heart doctrine and the zero point teaching. And the last thing you talked about was this special period in history. But I was thinking, well, even in the 20th century, if you go back, let's say 100 years ago, and you look at the, like, 1908, and you look at what's coming. Like, in 1908, you're undergoing this massive technological transformation. Electricity's just coming in the developed world. And the First World War, into the war to end all wars, is imminent, you know, and then there's gonna be this incredible, worldwide conflagration, which is gonna kill, I don't know how many people died in the First World War, 13 million, something like that? I don't really know, but it was a lot. And then, on top of that, there was a huge epidemic of Spanish flu. It killed, I think it actually killed more people than actually died. And then in the fighting, but then right after that, you know, you have the 20s, and you have the stock market crash, and then in the 30s, the depression. I mean, you can fast forward 25 years from 1908 to 1933, and, you know, you're on the verge of the Nazis are coming to power, and Stalin is in power in Russia and is killing people, his own people, through starvation in the Ukraine. Then you have the outbreak of the Second World War, and it kills 50 million people. And in the process of the war, you have the development of the technology of the atomic bomb. So like in that period, and then you can flash forward like another 25 years to 1963, and you have the Cuban Missile Crisis, and you have the world literally, on the brink of extermination. I mean, if you read the history of what happened there, we came very close to having a nuclear war in 1962, actually. And then you could flash forward, and then it's like 62 even going ahead like 15 years. Like, I remember when Reagan was just coming to power, the very real threat that seemed that there would be a nuclear war. I mean, we were both active in opposing that. And all through all this, there's incredible technological changes happening through the whole 20th century. So you could make the argument, I think, that really, we've been in the throes of this over the course of the last 100 years. I mean, you can go another 100 years before that. There's always like Gurdjieff talks about this in very interesting terms and says that there are points in history, in human history, where there have been kind of choosing points of critical mass or critical decisions where history has changed. And he says that for the most people are completely unaware of this, and it's very difficult sort of to determine from our perspective where we are. And he talks about it in terms of cosmological influences too. And I think these things happen. I'm just not convinced that that people have real insight or perspective on it. Like, if it's the Mayan calendar or whatever says 2012 is a critical year, okay, that perhaps it is, but perhaps it isn't. Like, it seems to me that throughout human history, that people are always saying, "Oh, that we're coming up to some sort of millennial point, or we're coming up to some sort of omega point where things are going to change." But my perspective on it is that I don't deny that this happens. Or I don't deny that this could happen. I just I'm very skeptical that people have an insight into it, and that really, I would say, like the things you're talking about. The world psychiatric disorder, I think the 20th century is one large psychiatric disorder if you look at it objectively. That's just my own perspective on it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's like Gurdjieff's perspective in Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. Like, one of the main themes of that book is that here's this Beelzebub who kind of comes from another solar system, and he sets up a telescope on Mars and lives on Mars, and he visits the planet Earth at different times in human history. And his main thing that he's trying to study is, what is it about this strange human psyche that people periodically go out and destroy each other and commit such mass murders? Like, what are the causes of war?
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Because he says, like, this is a phenomenal abnormality, unknown elsewhere in the universe. So what is it about the strange psyche of the three brain beings on planet Earth?
And also that they're so susceptible to suggestibility and mass suggestibility. Like, that's another thing that the tendency to believe what Gurdjieff's expression, the tendency to believe any old tale, and how people are manipulated throughout history by the belief in any old tale. And that's what I was trying to get at. I'm glad you actually said that, because getting back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, is just that, like, in a sense, like, I think religion has often been used, and this is what people object so much to, is like, religion is tied up with all sorts of crime and just unspeakable horrors which are carried out in the name of religion. But religion is just one thing that people use to do that. When you said, like, that the elites are suppressing religion, well, I mean, I don't quite see it that way. I see it
I would agree with what you're saying too.
I see it more
like
as
they've used religion too.
And also, I mean, it, like, the somehow something has gone seriously wrong with most religious teachings as they're presented, because the people, it's like psychology, it's like that doesn't address the real issues, like the issues of the I and the self and the nature of consciousness and the real nature of the human heart. And this is all in religious teachings, but it's become so distorted and skewed that people really don't recognize it, and they're caught up in all these exposition and presentation of all these doctrinaire ideas, which are really, you know, they're just somebody's opinion about things. They're not really the essence, I would say, of religious teachings. And all these disputes with other religions about, you know, who has the real insight into things is kind of, it's the confusion of tongues, you know, it's the Tower of Babel.
The Tower of Babel. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's, interestingly, it's like, the farther you get away from the source, away from the foundation, like that's the idea of the tower too, is that the higher up it goes, the more there is greater confusion and less recognition that everything kind of comes from this common foundation, this common groundwork. And so diversity has led to more and more misunderstanding, less and less comprehension and coherence of religious teachings, and I think that's part of the influence of the sleeping world on real ideas, is that even real ideas, as they pass into what Gurdjieff calls the outer circle or the exoteric circle of humanity, they become progressively more and more distorted. Like the example he always uses, which I really like, is that he said, think of how many changes in interpretation and understanding in Christianity that must have occurred to go from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount to the scholastics in the Middle Ages trying to calculate how many angels can dance on the head of a needle, or the torment and the persecution of the Inquisition. I mean, you know, all under the name of Christianity. That's the source of the confusion, is that everybody calls themselves a Christian, but you know, there are Christians and there are Christians, and that's generally what's not recognized. And that's the big failing with all of these books that talk about religion, is that they don't recognize any variation in degree of consciousness or being, and how that could affect somebody's religion. How the religion of man number 1, 2, and 3 is not the religion of man number 4, and it's not the religion of man number 5, 6, or 7. So, yeah, that's the big part of the problem. And
yeah,
that would
become like an opium of the masses, as Karl Marx referred
to it. That would apply to everything too. I mean, you know, it applies to education and it applies to democracy. I mean, it's like, you know, there could be a real democracy, but it's not the democracy of the people ruled by money, power, and sex, you know. Like, there could be a different democracy. There is a different education from that's ruled by the lower impulses, by lower consciousness and being. And that's the big failing, is to recognize that the level of one's consciousness and being changes everything. It changes the meaning of everything.
And it's also, it ties into Gurdjieff's distinction between the esoteric versus exoteric aspect of religion. Because when you and I are speaking about religion, we're trying to understand the esoteric side, meaning the hidden spiritual science that I would say is inherent in the genuine religious teachings. And then you have the exoteric, the outer form of how religious teachings become distorted. So the Catholic Church, which is supposed to propagate, you know, the teachings of Jesus Christ, you know, thou shalt not kill, and thou will have love and compassion on your neighbors. And then we find, you know, nations like in the United States now, no one in the churches is speaking up about the criminality of the government and the war crimes being committed around the world by American forces.
Yeah.
You know? Where are they? Where are the Christians? You know, and we have the Catholic Church where they killed millions in the Inquisition. You know? And now there's poverty around the world, and the Catholic Church has such immense, immense wealth. And do they ever do anything around the world to help relieve the suffering of humankind? No, nothing. Instead, they became the world's biggest pedophile organization. You know? And then the current Pope, what was his past job? Was to hide all the sex crimes of all the priests around the world so the Catholics couldn't, the Church couldn't be sued. You know, it's like between the act and the shadow, I think T.S. Eliot says.
Yeah.
Between the act and the reality, or falls the shadow.
Yeah.
The great gap, and how all these things have become so distorted. You know? Yeah. And Judaism, which also has such profound spiritual teachings in it, and the Jewish people do, and yet then we have these Zionist forces today that they don't care how many people they murdered to kind of carry forward their new world psychiatric disorder. I was thinking the other day, oh, Henry Kissinger, how many war crimes has that fellow been involved with? Vietnam War, the current war in the Middle East, he supported Mao. Didn't Mao exterminate 80 million Chinese? That was supported by the Rockefellers and Kissinger. And I think, oh, Henry Kissinger, nice fellow. He's been responsible for the murder of more people than all the Jews killed in the Second World War combined. Was one person.
He's respectable, though.
Oh, he's won a Nobel Prize for peace, hasn't he? Hasn't he won the Nobel Prize?
Hey, Lee Duck Tull and Henry Kissinger shared the Nobel Prize for ending the Vietnam War, which is one of the largest jokes of all time. But
I mean, these people control these prizes, the Nobel Prizes. I mean, the whole thing, they have so deceived humankind, and they've intentionally used the media. The media now, all the corporate media, are completely propaganda. I mean, I find it hard to turn the TV on. It's like a soap opera. These news reporters aren't news reporters. They're actors. It's a big soap opera, and they're pathological liars. You know, just like the Mumbai slaughter that's occurred, and how they're trying to blame it on Pakistan. And now all this information's coming out that suggests it was Mossad agents. And it was all conducted out of that Jewish center where the ammunitions were all accumulated there even before the whole thing came down. So now there's evidence that it's the CIA, Mossad, MI6. It's again, it's another black operation like 9/11. And the whole thing is staged because they want India and Pakistan to go to war as part of their extermination program and how to break up Afghanistan or Pakistan rather, and again it's all these lies, and the media, instead of reporting the truth, actually help to concoct these delusions that they foster on the public, that the delusion that Osama bin Laden and his reindeer down the Twin Towers, it's a complete lie. You know, the delusion that the Gulf of Tonkin led to the war in Vietnam, that was another complete lie. You know, all these lies. You know, the CIA, we're supposed to think the CIA kind of protects America and, you know, serves the purpose of justice and that. But then you look at history, you see the CIA is the world's leading terrorist organization. You know, they've fostered revolutions, assassinations around the world. You know, It's like everything is a lie, and people within the system, none of them kind of grasp the enormity of the pathology of the whole system. Well, the police services don't serve the people of America. CIA doesn't serve the people of America. They obscured the assassination of Kennedy, the Oklahoma City bombings, the assassination of Robert Kennedy, all these things. They don't serve people. They don't bring out the truth or restore justice. They're involved instead in the cover-ups and deception of the American public. It's so tragic. It's so tragic that, you know, the American dream became the American nightmare. You know, now it's funny hearing Bush talk about the axis of evil, like North Korea and Iran, as though these people are the axis of evil. The axis of evil is within the United States. They've become a world-leading terrorist organization. They even have it on paper. They even have it on paper that they want the PNAC document. They want a new America. American dominance, full court dominance around the world. So now Americans have military bases in 130 countries around the world. Wasn't that Hitler's plan? Isn't that what Hitler wanted? Hey, Jim, in terms of world domination? So now the Americans, Hollywood can create another phony movie, always presenting Americans as though they're the big heroes. you know, the big heroes who murdered 2 million people in Vietnam and sprayed everyone. So even 30 years later, everybody has all these deformities, and it's so tragic. You know, and all the lies, you know, the lies of Vietnam, the lies of Afghanistan, the lies of Iran, the lies of Iraq. Oh, it's just unbelievable. It's like humankind suffers under a delusional system.
I think we're running out of time.
Yeah, we have a couple minutes. So anyway, I am afraid we're in for a pretty traumatic year next year. I think it's, you know, apparently Biden's promise that there'll be testing of Obama early on. I think we're facing catastrophic things within America and elsewhere. I think they're carrying on their wars against us, spraying people with chemtrails, depleting the food resources, contaminating the food, genetic modified foods. Now that's being shown that some of these ingredients actually grow in you and replace some of the other proteins in your body. They have these new weapons that are connected to the new digital TVs and so on. We're really in for some troubled times, and hope for people that somehow we can, you know, turn these events around on the world stage. I would like people visit my website, www.zeropoint.ca. Have a lot of writings up there, and we have to keep the faith, hope, and love. Gurdjieff describes as higher being emotion. So we have to try to keep our faith, hope, and love, and have courage in the face of these monstrous things being done to us. And we thank BBS, thanks James, Jim, for the year's program.
Yeah.
We'll be back on I think next time it's the 7th of January.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. Looking forward to
anything you want to share, Jim? Otherwise, we'll sign off.
No, just that we're going to talk about the spiritual brain, I think, in 2 weeks, right, by Mario Beauregard and Denise O'Leary, which is a very interesting book.
It is interesting. Yeah, I've been working at it, too.
So have I. Great. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, thanks,
BBS
Radio.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. Thanks,
Keep
Doug.
The faith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember yourself.
Remember yourself, yeah. Okay,
amen.
Take care.
Goodbye.